The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Sam Monson, lead analyst at Pro Football Focus, is going to be with us in about 15 minutes. Pro Football Focus is owned by Chris Collinsworth and some other big broadcast folk, and they do a great job. A great, great, great job. And with the rise in analytics, more and more people are finding Pro Football Focus the place to go, even more so than the Kuipers and that. That's old school. No offense to those guys. It's great. But I think Pro Football Focus is leading edge looking forward. So Sam will be with us coming up at 10:20. Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist at 10:35. I had a terrific weekend. There's so much that went down. We had the Al McCoy ceremony on Friday night. We had the Cardinals losing Tony Jefferson and Calais Campbell, reportedly. We had, some other, the ASU-U of A game. I went to the ASU-U of A game. Actually went as a fan, did not have the credential around the neck. So we'll get into that in a minute. I watched very little of the combine because I just went back and scrolled through it on Twitter. The days of sitting there for 4 hours with dudes, hats backward, eating Taco Bell at 10 in the morning until 10 at night. Those days are gone. I don't see that anymore. And that was about it. There's a ton of stuff that happened over the weekend. I absolutely love the Steph Curry and Draymond Green being upset at Madison Square Garden yesterday because they didn't play music. Of course they didn't play music. Hey, Jared, why don't we do a show open with no music and see if I can get into it, you know? We have to have music in order to play basketball. If you did not hear about this story, Draymond Green was livid. He was incensed. He said it was a slap towards Rick Welts and the people that put the game together. So we'll see that a little bit later in the show. But I feel as though there's some things outside of just the typical bats, balls, sticks, and all that stuff that I want to get into today. So with that said, the big news, I think, to me is the Cardinals likely to lose Tony Jefferson and Calais Campbell. This is not a surprise. This will be page one news that they're leaving. I think if you do the money side of it, things run their course in the National Football League. Very, very seldom do you see guys that start and finish their career with the same team. We've said that in the past, and I'll even throw Larry Fitzgerald out there. I mean, Larry, keep playing. There's going to come a point. If he decides to retire as a Cardinal, that's fine, but that's not a given. It's not 100%. I could make connections to teams like the L.A. Chargers. I can make that connection real easy. Or Minnesota or all that stuff. But we're going to sit here and talk about Calais leaving. Calais Campbell has been a part of this franchise since the Super Bowl team, obviously, and has been terrific on the inside. There's been times where he has disappeared. There have been times where the organization has had to motivate him from the coach's podium on down. When I say motivate him, it's they've pointed out his inadequacies. I'm not going to do that. I just look at him and say, this is business and the business of the National Football League. The time has come. And if he does leave, I'm not going to be surprised. I'm not going to be upset. He's going to get paid a lot of money. At the end of the day, I'm about the players more than the team. That's just, these guys have a very short shelf life. They're treated as pieces of meat. And if they're able to go to places and make a gob of money, God bless them. When I read that Mike Glennon, who has not taken a snap this year, is going to get between $12 and $15 million to stay in Tampa Bay for season. I think Jameis Winston's feeling right about now. They're going to pay him what? So, yeah, that story is actually happening this morning. Tony Jefferson, it's the same deal. Oh, I can't believe he's going to get $10 million. Well, believe it. It just takes one crazy GM or owner. Tony Jefferson's a fine player. The Cardinals have had problems on the back end of their secondary. I wrote over the weekend that I know that he's not the number one player on a board, but where the Cardinals are drafting, if they decided to go take Christian McCaffrey, in my humble opinion, you can tell me that this player is better and this player is this player is that. Yeah, Reuben Foster's a great player, so he lights up somebody at a doctor's office or an emergency room. Does that mean that I'm not going to take him if he's sitting there at 13? Of course I'm not. I would take him. I'm not going to rule him out. I would take him. Let me be clear on that. But if we're being honest with each other about players that are productive on the offensive side of the football, and if we're being honest with each other about how things are going here in Arizona, it sounds great to say, well, we figured out what's wrong with John Brown and he's going to be back next season, back at 100%. Well, we think he might be. Jerron Brown, we think he's going to be good to go. He will be good to go. All these sure things. You don't know that. And Michael Floyd's no longer here, and Larry's coming up, could be the last year of his deal. Could I make a very easy case? J.J. Nelson has the case of the drops. Could I make an easy case that they need some depth at wide receiver? Sure, I can. Well, Brad, come on. They don't need Christian McCaffrey. They have David Johnson. David Johnson does not need to get lit up and play a heavy workload. I want to see David Johnson here for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. This is why I say I'm all about the players. Players are the ones that get the workload and get the snot beat out of them. And then they're done in the league. Christian McCaffrey is not just a wide or not just a running back. He's a wide receiver. Look at his all-purpose yards. Yeah, he had 724 touches, if I'm just going to stat you to death, the last 2 years in college. Does that mean he has some tread off the tire? Yeah, he does. How much tread is off the tire, though? Is there that much? All these guys have tread off the tire. Is this a setback if they lose Calais and Tony Jefferson? You have to wait and see how the other shoe drops. I'm getting this overreaction today of, oh, I can't believe the Cardinals are letting them walk. Well, there's a business side. If I'm going to take the Cardinals side of the street, I'm not going to tie up all my money on guys. I mean, they've tied up a ton of money and Tyrann Mathieu's been hurt, right? Am I right on that? The money that they gave last season to Patrick Peterson, I'm not denying that, but you've got to pay those core players. And at some point, guys that are no longer the core, they were a core, but now they're no longer the core. You've got to make these hard decisions. It's not fun. Nobody likes to go down that path, but I think it's a smart move on the Cardinals' part. So that caught my eye from the weekend. In terms of the combine, Myles Garrett just crushing it. A 4.6 40 when you're 270 pounds and you're 6'5", 272 he measured in at. So I'm 6'8", and I'm north of 270. I shouldn't be, but I am. Back in the day when I'm in my early 20s, I was like 255. I don't think I could have broke 5'2 or 5'3. I'm just a big old stick, right? But that's me. It's tough for tall guys to get around. 6'5", that's tall. 4'6"? Are you kidding me? 4'6"? That's going to crush a quarterback. That's just going to absolutely crush somebody. So for him, he solidifies himself as the number one pick, assuming Cleveland has it figured out. Again, we're talking about Cleveland, an organization that is consistently inconsistent. Commitment to incompetence, whatever term you want to use. Use the Raiders term, commitment to excellence, insert incompetence. And that's what you got. But they do have a lot of assets there in Cleveland. They could get things figured out in a hurry. And a guy like Myles Garrett, you would think would be the right way to go. For the Cardinals at 13, today the defensive backs are going through their drills. We'll talk with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus, their lead NFL analyst, here in a couple of minutes about what's gone on today at the Combine and some other stuff. We shift over to college basketball. So went to the ASU-U of A game. A friend of mine calls me and says, let's go. Put your credential away. Don't work. Let's just go hang out. I very seldom do that through the years. I would never have done this 5 years, 10 years, 15, but the lines are blurred now. Where media should be able to go and enjoy themselves. I'm a basketball fan. I coach my son. And the guy that I went with, his seats were in, we were in row two, right behind Sean Miller. Sean Miller's wife and son were right next door, right next row to us. And Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, a big U of A fan, was two seats down from me. We had a nice visit about his team this year and the Diamondbacks and all that. And it was a pleasure to watch Sean Miller coach. If you're a U of A fan, man, you have a guy there that is completely, totally under control. You watch a game on television. I guess it's funny when somebody, you watch a game on TV and you've got it all figured out versus if you're there in the arena looking, and I'm talking specifically about coaches. Like I watch Bobby Hurley and people say Bobby Hurley whines too much. Bobby Hurley is just coaching his ass off because he has nobody in the way of height or size. He has no size on that team. He's got Cody Justice trying to go up against Lauri Markkanen, who's going to be a lottery pick at 6'11". That's just not going to work. And they got Markkanen in foul trouble 2 minutes into the game. He's on the bench. So I'm watching Markkanen and how he handles his body mannerisms. I'm a big believer in that. How does a guy handle the adversity? He gets two fouls. He doesn't sit there and whine and mope and drop his head. He goes and sits right there in the middle of the bench, not at the end of the bench. He's completely engaged in the process. He's cheering for his teammates. The second half, Lauri Markkanen was easily the best player on the floor and completely dominated Arizona State in every way, every shape, every form. he had some swats in the game yesterday on Saturday. You see one here that were just phenomenal plays on his part. I admired how Sean handles his timeouts. He doesn't have them up against the bench. He goes out onto the floor. When we watch a game on television, you don't see that stuff much. It's little things, how his timeouts are so organized. When he comes off a timeout, he runs set plays. Like ASU had a couple of timeouts where they ran some set plays. I myself wasn't big on backdoor lobs off of set timeouts against teams that have a 7-footer in Ristich and in Markkanen, but that's just me. And ASU executed the plays. They just weren't able to get them the basket, the ball to fall through. I'm taking the show to Vegas on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We'll be at the T-Mobile Arena doing the show from the Pac-12 tournament. And I think Arizona State, as hard as they play, they open with Stanford, a team that they beat twice. A team that I think that if you look at them, and we'll get into this a little bit further with Paula, that ASU should be able to win, and that takes them into the second round. U of A, on the other hand, they have either Colorado or Washington State. They didn't play Colorado twice. They only played them once. Again, U of A should roll on that one. What was interesting to me, and then we'll take a break, on Saturday was U of A struggled. In fact, they were down at one point in the first half. And when they were down during timeouts, there were fans, a lot of them, and these are old school, old guard U of A fans. And they're standing up and they're yelling things at the U of A bench like, Sean, you better wake him up or you're going to be home after the first weekend in the NCAA tournament. They were brutal. They were getting after Sean Miller and his team. And then they calmed down and they did what they're supposed to do. And that's step on ASU like a bug and squash him. But I do feel very good about the direction that Bobby Hurley has this thing going in just year two. He doesn't have any size yet. He'll recruit it. He's got some size coming in. Like his guard play. Looking forward to seeing him in Vegas. We're going to talk some NFL draft and NFL on the other side. Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, NFL lead analyst for Pro Football Focus. That is next. I am Brad Sussmat. Right, let's turn our attention now to the Arizona Cardinals and, of course, the Combine wrapping up, all things around the National Football League. And here's somebody you're going to want to follow on Twitter. Sam Monson is with us, at @PFF_Sam. Sam is with Pro Football Focus, lead NFL analyst. Of course, you can go to profootballfocus.com. We've talked about them quite a bit, I think, in this day and age of analytics. They're really with Chris Collinsworth leading the way at the front end. Not even the front end, way out in front of everybody on the analytics side and just analysis around the National Football League. Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good. Thanks for jumping on board with us. Sam, I want to start the conversation with the Cardinals. And first, it sounds as though, reads as though, we're hearing out here that Calais Campbell and Tony Jefferson are both going to be leaving via free agency. How big a blow is that? What do you see for both of those players in terms of productivity going out the door here in Arizona?
Yeah, I think Calais Campbell is the bigger loss. I mean, he both literally and metaphorically. You know, he's been the linchpin of the middle of that defense, a huge guy, can play in any kind of defensive front. I know they list him as a 3-4 end, but he essentially plays three technique like a defensive tackle far more than he plays any other defensive line technique when you look at where he's actually lining up snap to snap. And he's a guy that, weirdly, despite his advancing age, is only getting better. I mean, he's had career years the last couple of seasons. He's a really big guy that can push the pocket, get some penetration, you know, create pressure, and also stuff the run. So I think the writing is kind of on the wall given his age. I don't think the team wanted to commit big long-term money to the guy, but he, I think, is going to be a big loss to that defense, and a huge addition to somebody else if they manage to snag him. He becomes, I think, the jewel of this free agent group, which is not the strongest in the world. Tony Jefferson is interesting because he played really well this past season and has developed into this excellent strong safety. The problem is that position just isn't that valuable in today's NFL. Everybody is chasing, you know, the new Earl Thomas, the free safety, the guy that can go deep middle and make those single high schemes function. And the strong safety is the guy that kind of gets moved into the box once the team has figured out that he can't really do that deep free-lying role. And I think that's kind of what you have with Tony Jefferson. He's hitting free agency with a bunch of these guys that didn't really work out as the free safety and have turned into very good strong safeties. But what you have now is just, you know, a buyer's market. There's so many of them that even when you get a good one, like a guy like Tony Jefferson, it's just not that valuable a person to try and put your money into.
Is this a big blow, not just on one player, but on both players leaving here? Or in this day and age of free agency, Sam, do you see enough depth that they can turn around out here and Steve Keim, Bruce Arians can bring some players back? How big a blow is this?
Yeah, I think Jefferson is a fairly replaceable player. You know, it's not because he isn't a good player. I think he is. It's just that what he offers in that position is not that hard to replicate. You know, like I say, there's a glut of those guys on the free agent market this offseason. And I think you should be able to replicate what you lose in Tony Jefferson easy enough. And even if it's not in free agency, you know, in the draft a bit later, Calais Campbell is going to be a tougher hole to fill because, one, he is that good. You know, you're talking about one of the very best interior defenders out there. Two, because there aren't that many of those guys hitting free agency. You know, a lot of the top guys have already been taken away. There weren't that many great interior defenders anyway. You know, the marquee interior guy after Calais Campbell is probably somebody like Nick Fairley. And then you get into those very one-dimensional interior guys like Brandon Williams, the sort of nose tackle players that only really defend the run, don't have a huge amount about them in terms of pass rush. The big thing for Arizona, I think, is going to be Robert Kandice, who, you know, his rookie season was basically a wash, but he has the potential to step in and be the biggest part of replicating what you lost in Calais Campbell if he can show you why he was drafted so highly in year two.
Talking with Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus lead NFL analyst, ProFootballFocus.com. Great content there that you can check out. The fallout from the combine, the Cardinals are sitting there at number 13. Needs in the secondary, finding that replacement for Carson Palmer. Two-part question. Let's just start with quarterbacks. Do you find that replacement based now what we know from quarterbacks, or do you find that replacement in veteran free agency? What do you see there, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, the free agent quarterback market is always a pretty ugly place to be. You know, if teams have good quarterbacks, they don't let them hit the open market unless there's a very good reason for it. The only one that may hit the market who any team would have serious interest in, I think, is going to be Tyrod Taylor from Buffalo. And, you know, the Bills seem to be balking at the huge amount of money they have committed to him. But Tyrod Taylor is a guy that can definitely play. He's not necessarily going to be the most productive quarterback in the world in terms of putting up massive numbers, 4,000-yard seasons, 40 touchdowns, that kind of thing. But he's an efficient guy. He has an extremely low career interception rate. He has an extremely high career touchdown rate in terms of how often he's actually passing the ball. So he's the kind of quarterback you can win with. That being said, I think this draft is actually a good position for a team like the Cardinals who don't need to play the guy day one, because I don't know if any of these top quarterbacks are capable of playing day one and doing well. I think they all need a bit of work to varying degrees. And I think the Cardinals are actually in a pretty good position of being able to choose the guy that best fits their scheme and take that guy in the first round and sit him for a year in a way that most teams don't get the opportunity to anymore. And a guy like DeShone Kizer from Notre Dame is a really interesting quarterback like that, because he is pretty raw. He's kind of inaccurate. There's a lot of stuff to work on in his game, but he's got that big body that the Cardinals and their kind of scheme likes. He throws deep. He's got a fantastic arm. And the deep pass is maybe the best thing about his game. Last season, you know, his passer rating in terms of NFL passer rating was 118.8 on deep passes, against only the Power 5 competition, so only the best teams he's facing. He was one of the best in the nation in terms of going deep. So I think someone like Kizer might not fit everybody's scheme, but he's actually a really interesting fit within that Bruce Arians Arizona system.
If he's one, who's 1A among the quarterbacks in your view for Arizona? Let's say Kizer's off the board. Who's next that makes sense for Arizona that could be there?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is I don't know that Kizer would be number one in terms of overall ranking, but I think for the Cardinals, he's a great fit.
Sure.
And then I think another guy that's an interesting fit would be Mitch Trubisky, Mitchell, as he's decided he wants to be known. Mitchell Trubisky's he might have the best ceiling of any of these quarterbacks. I think he's the most natural kind of pocket passer of the group, but you're talking about a one-year starter. You know, there's some rawness to his game that comes from just not a huge amount of experience back there. You can see, you know, an inconsistent deep ball. Sometimes he just puts the ball up in ill-advised situations, doesn't always see the blitz. You know, he's a little bit skittish in the pocket at times. But I think, again, you know, you're a team in Arizona that doesn't need to put this guy out there day one and can afford to be a little bit patient with him. And he, I think, could be a great fit as well as, you know, the quarterback of the future.
If we're looking over on the defensive side of the football, so a corner opposite Patrick Peterson has been talked quite a bit about. We mentioned Tony Jefferson earlier. Of the DBs that you've seen that have gone through the combine, I know they're doing their running still, but who makes sense for Arizona at 13 that could be there that you really like, that you think, you know what, Brad, this is a middle round first round pick?
Yeah, I think this is a great year to be looking for a cornerback. I think this is a fantastic group. There's a whole bunch of really talented guys out there. I think the best corner and the best among them all is Marshon Lattimore, but I expect him to be long gone by the time the Cardinals are picking. A guy that I think is really intriguing, though, is Sidney Jones from Washington, who was a teammate of Marcus Peters back a couple of years ago, and not a dissimilar player. I don't think he's quite as talented as Peters. I'm not quite as physical and just not quite where Peters is, but he's the same type of player, and I think it would be a really interesting fit opposite Patrick Peterson.
Let me throw a couple other names at you. We're talking about Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. Go to ProFootballFocus.com, and you can also follow Sam on Twitter. Myles Garrett, did he do anything to surprise you? I mean, everybody's raving about his 40 time. I'm looking at him saying this is what we expected, first overall pick in the draft, right?
I think it is. I think everyone expected him to test well, but when you get it reinforced like that, and he was probably at the upper end of everybody's expectations across the board. So I think he just slightly outperformed everybody's expectations all the way. And yeah, I mean, he cemented himself as the number one prospect in this draft, no, for sure.
Christian McCaffrey, what did he do? What didn't he do? Is there too much wear and tear on the tires? I bring him up because we saw him every year. I'm a Heisman voter. I voted for him 2 years ago for the award. And you look here in Arizona, Larry Fitzgerald, long in the tooth. He's back next season, led the league in receptions. You don't know about the health of John Brown or Jerron Brown. Michael Floyd's no longer here. They have a need. J.J. Nelson has a case of the drops. They have a need as a multi-purpose guy in a Bruce Arians offense. What did you see out of McCaffrey?
Yeah, I thought McCaffrey should have won the Heisman a couple of years ago instead of Derrick Henry. I mean, he was that Stanford offense, and he was absolutely phenomenal. Anytime you break a record that was previously held by Barry Sanders, you're doing something pretty good.
Yeah.
I think McCaffrey showed at the combine that he is an incredibly natural receiver. He caught the ball like a wide receiver, ran routes like a wide receiver, and I think he could legitimately play wide receiver. I think the best way he could be used at the NFL level is to become this hybrid player where he plays running back and wide receiver and just becomes a matchup problem on offense. You know, you can motion him out and suddenly you've got a linebacker or a safety on him, or you can keep him in the box. And, you know, if you're playing him with a cornerback or a safety, you get outmanned in the run game. So I think you just use him as a matchup tool to make the defense wrong, whatever they do. I think that's the best way to use him. But you could theoretically, I think, legitimately line him up at any position on offense and get away with it in terms of running back and receiver.
Okay, last question. This is the obvious one after every combine. Who helped themselves most? Who hurt themselves most from your view at the combine?
Yeah, I think one guy that really helped himself a huge amount, and he's a guy that is going to send me back to the tape because I didn't see this, was Jordan Willis, an edge rusher from Kansas State, who actually had a really good grade with us this past season. But when I first put on his tape, he just looked really stiff, didn't really turn the corner, you know, had some good straight line speed, but couldn't put it all together and bend with that kind of fluid movement that you see from a guy like Von Miller. But he absolutely blew the combine away from, you know, fantastic 40 yards and 10 yard splits. But all of his movement drills look fantastic as well. All of the stuff that isn't timed, and then the three cone and the short shuttle, the stuff that is timed as well. So suddenly he's a guy that I think is going to send everybody back to the tape and find out why that didn't look like it was the case, you know, when they first watched it. But he's a guy that I think has definitely helped himself.
Hurt himself. Anybody that jumped out of you, they're like, wow, this is a disappointing weekend for them.
There aren't that too many guys that I think really hurt themselves. Tease Tabor, one of the top corners, actually proclaimed himself to be the best corner in the draft. A kid from Florida this year just ran in the 4.6s, I think was his first run. I didn't see his second run, see if he bettered that. But if he's a 4.6 guy, that's going to raise some questions in a strong cornerback class and potentially drop him down the board.
Mm. I appreciate your insight. Good stuff. Love to catch up with you again, Sam. Thanks.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Good deal. Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, profootballfocus.com. All things around the National Football League and the Combine. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Paula Bova, News and Notes is next. Stay with us.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Have you decided yet if we're going to Vegas? Last week you weren't sure. Am I
going
to see you in Vegas?
I am not going.
You are not going to Vegas.
No, I wish I was going, but I'm not. But I will be watching it on TV. You will be there, Brad?
I will be there. I will be
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you hear your report on the new arena.
Yeah, so it's a T-Mobile this year. I saw Paula Saturday at the game. I was dressed like a schlemp, and I walked by her. I'm like, hey, that's Paula Bovin. You're awesome, and you're amazing. She turns and looks at me like, who the heck are you? The game itself, so let's start with ASU U of A. I went as a fan of basketball. I could care less. I sat right behind Sean Miller, and I have to tell you, this is not meant in braggadocious sort of way, just first and foremost. This is meant that I'm that close that I can see him differently than sitting up in a press bunker 40 rows up and trying to crane my neck over people. And I saw body language out of Lauri Markkanen where he was really bad in the first half. You were there. The second half, he looked like a lottery pick. And, you know, you look at U of A, and in one half you hear fans yelling, hey, Sean, you better get this figured out or you're going to be home for after the first weekend of the tournament. And then by the time the game ends, you're saying there's not a chance that this is not a team that is in at least the Elite Eight, right? I mean, they're so good.
Oh, my God. It was – I had the exact same feeling. I was telling somebody sitting next to me in the first half. I don't understand – who this team is, but
right.
You know, he's good at those halftime adjustments and definitely lit a fire under him. You know, the thing I think that's going to save them is a couple things that really help you in the tournament. They tend to play pretty consistently, not always, really good defense. They have the tools for that. They have big guys in the middle and they have good guard play. I mean, you know, they're not always firing on all cylinders, and I think they need their outside shooting to click if they're going to succeed. But they have the tools to be a Final Four team. You know, it's just a matter of if it's all working. But I agree with you.
I'll tell you what was frustrating to me, and I was watching the U of A bench, and they didn't get overly excited about it. Guys, when you've got Cody Justice on Lauri Markkanen, and Lauri Markkanen's down in the low block, and he's got Cody Justice sealed off, and you don't give him the ball because you want to jack up a 20-foot jump shot, are you kidding me? So there's this little bit of, I don't know if it's selfishness, I don't know if it's I got to get mine, I don't know what it is, but the 1, 2, and 3 settling for jump shots with that group, I don't get it. That was my takeaway from the game, too.
Well, I will tell you the one of the very rare criticisms I hear about Sean Miller, and honestly, I don't know enough of him watching him consistently to know if it's accurate, but people inside basketball, and everybody loves him, and he's getting my vote for Pac-12 Coach of the Year, that he doesn't develop his big men enough. And so there is a feeling, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know, you know, if there's not a comfort level with that. But, yeah, there were definitely frustrating moments. But then, you know, then you just saw in the second half how good a team they can be.
All right, I got the bracket in front of me. So ASU opens with Stanford. They beat them twice. They beat Stanford on Wednesday. Then they get Oregon. Now, Oregon appears to me to be the best team, but down the stretch, they've had to have some nail biters, buzzer beaters, Dylan Brooks at Cal, among others, in order to win their fair share of games, be the number one seed. Does ASU have any shot at being the team that can go on a run here in the Pac-12 tournament?
Oh, they have a shot, and I don't think I would have said that at the beginning of the season, but I really have been impressed by Hurley and how hard these teams play. But it would be a case of ASU having to just shoot lights out, because
right.
that's really the only thing I think that could enable them to have success against teams like Oregon or Arizona. And it's unlikely that they could put together that kind of run in a tournament, a Pac-12 tournament. They could do it a game or two games, but you know, you have to win more than that to get some mojo and win that thing.
Talking news and notes, Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist. Other side of the bracket, U of A only played Colorado once. They swept Washington State, so they shouldn't have any problems. Then they meet UCLA on Friday night. From your view, who's the better team right now?
That's a hard question, Brad. I wish I could, you know, I wish I could say definitively. I don't know. I think they're pretty, they both have their moments and they both have their lapses. I would probably go with Arizona only because sometimes I see UCLA, I don't think they play as smart as U of A does sometimes. Yeah. I think they have as much talent. I just don't think they play as smart as U of A does. So if I have to give an edge, I'd give it to the Wildcats.
Calais Campbell, Tony Jefferson likely leaving the Cardinals via free agency. I am not surprised at all by this. Are you?
Not surprised, but I think it's concerning. And I think it's concerning because of their locker room presence. I think especially, you know, everybody knows sort of about Campbell and what a great leader he is and everything else. But Tony Jefferson is sort of the darling of that defensive back group. He's, you know, funniest guy in the locker room. People like, I always would see players around his locker after practices. And, you know, I know it's not end-all stuff, and he's going to make big money. I mean, the DBs are getting paid this year from what I've been reading. And so he's going to make some huge money, and I understand it. But I worry just the loss of both of those guys in the locker room. It'll be interesting to kind of see who steps up and fills those roles.
Let me switch over to the Suns. So Jerry Colangelo not speaking on Friday night for Al McCoy's ceremony into the Ring of Honor. Should he have spoke, in your opinion, or not?
Yes. In fact, I was just speaking. You remember Bob Young, Mike's
yes.
former colleague there at
yep.
the Arizona Republic, works over here at Cronkite. We were just talking about that. And and we kind of came to the conclusion that there was probably fear of Robert Sarver getting booed and Jerry Colangelo getting cheered. I remember something happened like that in another ceremony. I can't remember off the top of my head which one. But that's my guess of maybe why it didn't. And I think it's silly. I mean, if anyone should be speaking with Al McCoy there, it should have been Jerry Colangelo.
I'm just wondering if Jerry, and I actually saw Jerry last Thursday. We didn't talk about that. But mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if Jerry said, you know, I can give Al a phone call, and Al knows my affection for him. If Jerry said graciously, I'd rather not speak. I don't know that as fact. I would hope that he wouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Robert's got to face the music. You know, when Robert walked out on the floor to do the introduction of Al, he wasn't even booed. It was just kind of indifferent. And that's not good. That's actually the worst part of the whole deal, is indifference towards somebody when you're in that position as an owner.
No, you're right. You're right. And you're right also about Jerry. I don't know if that's true, but that is something I could see him do.
Sure.
You know, Robert Sarver knows there's one way that can end all this. You know, this team's got to win, and they got to get in the postseason. Fans are very forgiving, even with a long history of no success here, for the most part, with him as an owner. Not totally, but, you know, that can change if this team starts winning. So that shouldn't be an obstacle for having someone like Jerry Colangelo speak.
I thought the ceremony itself was great, that Al's son was out there and they gave him the piano. I would have liked to have had Al play a little bit longer. You know, he just did like 15 seconds of doing his thing. On the Robert ownership thing, I just think he's just dead set on saying, you know what, I'm making gobs of money. I don't need to do anything different. And until I get a new building, I'm not going to really invest much into this. I just think he's basically putting it out there that I got this figured out. I'm making gobs of money, and if fans want to show up and watch an inferior product, that's their prerogative. And that's what he's done.
Well, I can't imagine he thinks that way. I know that
really?
He doesn't like. Yeah, he doesn't like to be booed. He doesn't like to be known as a bad owner.
Well, they didn't even boo him the other night, Paula. They didn't do anything to him the other night. It's just kind of like, this is what we got here. We're stuck. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's changed for 7 years, so. I mean, that's the indifference is the worst.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't think he doesn't care about it. I think he hates it. But he just hasn't found a way to figure it out. I like what they're doing now. I don't know how long it's going to take. I've liked how this team has played. I know kind of goes against what we're all hoping is, you know, they get that. We don't want them to tank, but we hope they lose, and it's not happening. But the reality is, I mean, that ending last night was so fun to watch. I've always been sort of a Tyler Ulis kind of fan anyway, it's been fun to watch them.
All right. Anything else you're working on this week? Or are you just teaching? You're on spring break. You're not even teaching. You're on spring break.
Yeah, no, but the Cronkite Sports Bureau is in full action here. We've got a newsroom to run, you know.
Oh, so, I know.
We're still working.
All right. Stay well. See
all
you
right,
later.
Brad.
There's Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist and professor over at Cronkite. I think she said last week it's the end of April that she is leaving as columnist, and she's going to just go to Cronkite full-time. I'm going to talk about the Suns game and the ending on the other side. And also this story involving the Knicks and Golden State yesterday, where the Knicks decided not to play any music at all. I mean, is it intentional? Because the Knicks are just such an incompetent group of dopes that have no idea doing what they do. And James Dolan can make gobs of money. And he's just, I mean, these guys that think they know how to run sports franchises and don't care and just gouge fans to death, doesn't matter if it's in Phoenix or if it's in New York City, just put this crapola out on the floor. We can get into that on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmann. All right, so I'm not going to continue to do this in every show about whether the Suns should lose or not lose. My stance has been that they need to lose and tank away. And they haven't. So the last three games, they've gone out and they've won. They beat Boston yesterday. It was a terrific ending. You know, we don't got to take away the athleticism of the players and the ability to go out and create a great shot and give the fans their money's worth, that they stick around and watch a game. And you know, they beat Oklahoma City the other night and Russell Westbrook went out and did his thing. I'm not going to take away from that. It's just the only thing that makes common sense for this franchise is to lose, and they just won't do that. And it doesn't mean at the end of the game Tyler Ulis shouldn't be trying to make a shot. He's out on the floor. He's trying to do his thing and get paid. But there are ways to manipulate games. There just are. You don't play certain players in stretches, and you just do things out on the floor where you call certain plays. There's ways to manipulate the game. And people think that that's the wrong way to go, and that because you haven't played, Brad, you have no idea. No, I have an idea. I have a very strong idea, and I actually think I'm dead flat right on this, and tanking has been around for a long, long time. But I'm not going to take away from what happened yesterday. Tyler Ulis was a terrific play. I mean, you can't be upset about that. Bledsoe had 28. They had 9 assists. They had 6 boards. Tomorrow night, they have the Washington Wizards. And that means that Markieff Morris comes back to town and the fans will lustily boo him. And Martin Gortat comes into town and fans will lustily boo him. And Washington will win or lose, and Washington will go on to the playoffs and the Suns will not. It's just what we're stuck with here. A team that was like the Washington Wizards for years and years and years, and now we're in this rut here in Arizona where we can never get our way into the playoffs because we've just got incompetence all over the place. So that's how it works for the Suns, and it's a nice 3-game win streak and a terrific ending yesterday. And those are good teams that they're beating. It doesn't matter if it's the first week in March and teams like Boston, Oklahoma City are like, yeah, get back to me when it's mid-April. And if you're Earl Watson, you've got to show that you're coaching to win. You've got to show that you've got the team in place and you have the right groups on the floor. I get it. I'm not going to sit here today and say, well, they should trade Brandon Knight. Well, the trade deadline's not going on right now, brain surgeon, so no joke. It's just, you can't do anything here in the next, I don't know, up until July 1st. You can't do anything. So I don't care if Brandon Knight plays at this point. If you want to play him and it helps you lose, then go ahead. That's just my view. The more they lose, the happier I am. Otherwise, just like, get back to me when the season's over and they miss the playoffs. And boy, do you remember that stretch where they won those games? Our boys were really good. Yeah, you missed the playoffs by 10. So there's that story. This story yesterday was my favorite one of the weekend. I sent Eric a text about, did you see what's going on in New York where the Knicks are doing their thing? So the backstory on this is the Knicks have been just this train wreck of a franchise where I can sit here and rip on the Suns all day long. But when you're in New York, you have a different space in which you're playing in. You know, you've got all the assets in the world. Here in Phoenix, you could say you are limited, even though the rules to me say otherwise. You could say you're limited. Well, there's not the corporate dollars out here. Yeah, but if you win, the corporate dollars will come. Well, how do you know? Well, how do you know? You know, you don't win out here, so you don't know. All that to say, so the Knicks decided yesterday that let's not play music for the first half of an NBA game. Now, through the years going to NBA games, this is what was up on the screen yesterday at Madison Square Garden when they came in. First half of the game, we presented with no music, video, in-game entertainment. So you can experience the game in its purest form. Enjoy the sounds of the game. They decided to do this when they have Golden State in town. Golden State, one of the best teams in the league, top draw in the league. Fans show up, fans pay big jack. And let's pick this game rather than, I don't know, a worthless game against Brooklyn or Memphis or even Phoenix rolling through town. Let's throw this down on fans who have gotten used to something. Let's play around with the whole experience when it's Golden Fleeping State in town.
I take a completely different spin than you do. It's their arena. They can do whatever they want. Why do they care? Why do they care what the Golden State Warriors think? If they want to play
they
music,
don't. It's
they
fans.
Can,
I'm talking about fans. Yeah. Fans pay their money. Fans have an in-game experience.
But
so they're gonna try something new for the biggest draw of the year.
But there was no music back in the day. There was just an organist and a PA announcer. And so, it's okay. It's fine. And of
when
course
Denver
the Knicks,
rolls, when Denver rolls in,
of course
do it when
the
Denver
Knicks
rolls
of
in.
Course the Knicks picked this date.
Of course
and
the
this
Knicks
opponent.
Did.
Of course they did. But I just don't. It's their arena. It does the NBA rulebook doesn't say you have to play music.
It's one of those deals where I'm looking at this saying you guys really are incompetent all over the place. Your owner's nuts. He's a loon job. They have a bad roster. The only good move they made was bringing poor Jeff Hornacek in there. And now Jeff, and they brought in poor Mike D'Antoni before that. So two guys who I know well have gone through that circus.
Look, if you're hurting the fans, Brad, they're the ones that are helping fill the arena. Well, kind of, sort of fill the arena to watch a really bad product.
Do you think they knew that going to the game, Eric?
The fans?
Yeah.
No.
No, this game,
I doubt it.
Hey, son, hey, daughter, they're not going to play any music or have anything on the video boards at the game. That's kind of like saying, hey, when we get to the game, we've decided we're not going to sell Pepsi. We're going to sell Sprite, but we just decided this game, we're not going to do a hot dog, but you can go buy something else.
You know what the Knicks should have done if the Knicks were smart? They should have called this, turn back the clock to the mid-1970s. We're going to
a little bit of advance.
Throwback uniforms,
notice.
Cheap concessions, no music.
But here's the thing on this.
But they didn't.
So Draymond Green goes crazy about this afterwards. Draymond Green was not happy. Here's Draymond Green. This was after the game took place.
Changed the flow of the game. It changed everything. You get so used to playing the game a certain way. You completely change that. I think it was disrespectful to everyone from Michael Levine to Rick Welts and all these people who've done these things to change the game. You know, from an entertainment perspective, you know, and get a game a great vibe. That's completely disrespect. You advance things in the world to make it better. You don't go back to what was bad. And so it's like computers can do anything for us. It's like going back to paper. Like, why would you do that? So it was ridiculous.
I think that's good.
That's a great bite. I mean, because that's a great analogy. Like, why would we go back to using
paper? But you're changing
paper?
Your tune on me here.
Well, I agree with what the player said, but again, it's up to the Knicks. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, but it's the Knicks.
That doesn't help matters.
If
the Bucks did it, it wouldn't be a big deal.
Right,
it?
No. We're not talking about if it's the Knicks and Warriors. It's the Warriors, too. I mean, his point about Rick Welts, Rick has been on the front end of all this in the league. Now, when we go to games, music has been a part of games forever. Gets everybody all pumped up. Alan Parsons' project, Eye in the Sky, for the Suns when they go to the NBA championship, right? Eye in the Sky, Alan Parsons, has been around forever. There's not a better song to get people pumped up, jacked up. Jeff Munn doing the PA back in the day. Now you're Phoenix Sun. I mean, the place goes crazy, right? You pull that out, and some of you are saying, oh, I just only care about basketball. You know what? If players have a routine, players are used to playing in a certain environment. If one day I decided to play music under me while doing this show, then I would probably struggle with it for the first few weeks, especially if Eric just said, I'm going to play music under you every show now, without even giving me a heads up, without any advance warning. It would make no sense. But in my work environment, in your work environment that you're in today, in your cubicle, or whatever it is that you are in today. So you can talk all you want about, well, the guy gets paid all this money. He's got to have his routine in order to do it. Again, I side with players on this. I really do. Sports360AZ.com. Hey, tomorrow, Jake Plummer is going to be with us. Jake is doing a cool business venture down here involving high school football. Very cool. That I think, and he's already tied into several of the top football programs. I saw Jake last week about it. So Jake's going to Skype in tomorrow. We're going to talk about that. And I'll be in Vegas on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Thanks to the good people at Columbus Craft Meats. Appreciate their support. We'll be at the T-Mobile Arena in downtown Las Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament later on this week. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board, Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of everything. We appreciate our guests today, Scott Monson and Paula Bovin. And we appreciate our sponsors that take care of us. Okay, Ford, appreciate them. Shamrock, appreciate them. Columbus, appreciate them. Visit Mesa, appreciate them. And those of you that have been with us through the years, thanks for being with us.